Welcome to the NewsHour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest is James Petras. Jim is Binghamton University of New York, Professor Emeritus of Sociology. Besides, always new listeners, so I like to repeat it. Besides his distinguished academic career, he's a noted figure on the left, a well-respected Latin American expert, and a long-time chronicler of the region's populist struggles. He also is an I think we have an extra guest this morning, but I'll let Jim explain that. I thought I heard a bark in the background.
it must be on that end or someone listening in and adding their bark to the interview. My dog is sleeping.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let me just mention, Jim, that you've written many dozens of books, hundreds and hundreds of articles, and your latest book is titled, we talked about it on a past program. It's a terrific title, and I think it sums up so much of what's going on now, Global Depression and Regional Wars. So let me set the table for you for a lot we can talk about this morning, Jim, since the last time you came on in December. We had the special election in Massachusetts, and the Democrats lost their supermajority in the Senate. We had Obama's State of the Union address, where he proposed, well, the biggest ever military budget, of course, kind of implied that as long as the bankers need help, they'll get all the help that they want. No budget freeze on them. But when it comes to essential services that people are in great need of, given the dire economic situation, he's proposing a freeze, which, of course, means a cut. A freeze means a three-year freeze. It means a cut. And then we had the Haiti earthquake. We're coming up on the one-month anniversary this Friday, and it's been a disaster in Haiti. The country is militarized. Oh, I've written a lot about it, and I'm going to write something more about it as well, because things continue to get worse. It is any way we look at it, Jim, domestic, foreign, things are pretty awful. I'll let you jump in. Why don't we start with the Haiti earthquake?
Well, it's a boon for the military, U.S. military, that is, because it allows them to justify the $800 billion military budget. It's a boon for these international humanitarian organizations, which skim off about 90% in administrative overhead costs for administering the aid. It's a boon for politicians to try to divert attention from some of the militarist activities and the human military disasters they're causing. It's a tremendous tragedy for the Haitian people, but not for the government, which is dealing in all this aid and pocketing most of it. I just read where there's a huge demonstration yesterday because the mayor was skimming off, stealing the aid and selling it. Both a boondoggle for the usual suspects, the government officials and the military, and local Haitian officials who are in power largely because of the overthrow of the previous elected government, the Bertrand Aristide, thanks to Washington. But the Haitian people are suffering the most, and they're not getting treated by Marines guarding airports. They're being
You sure not, Jim. Jim, I need to interrupt you because they're going to break away. Let's do that. We'll come right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back. Talking with Jim Petras on Haiti. Jim, you've touched on some of what I want to address in another article the fact that these so-called NGOs, aid charities, I mean, we know what the big ones do, the USAIDs and the IMF, the World Bank. I mean, they're predators on a scale that not to even imagine pretending to be do-gooders, and all they do is go in and aid the corporate interest to plunder, enslave countries in debt and so on and so forth. Haiti still has a lot of debt, even after some of it being relieved. I think it's still about $900 million, which is awful for a country like Haiti that has nothing. And most of the charities, including well-known ones, multinational ones, that people think are doing a lot of good. I mean, you said it. I mean, they strip off most of the money people give them. They strip off, and it's theirs. It never gets to the people. And that's exactly what's happening in Haiti now. That's what happened in East Asia after the tsunami. Over $1 billion. People contributed over $1 billion, Jim. And most of it went to a development so predators, profiteers, could put up a coastal area, whatever they wanted to do, marinas, condos, or whatever they put up. And they just expelled the people who lived there inland into temporary facilities. And years later, I believe they're still there. Nothing was done for them. And that's exactly what's going
to
happen to Haitians.
Happened in Louisiana and Mississippi with Katrina.
Oh, exactly.
They used the catastrophe to drive working people, black and white, out of the choice areas and set up the clubs and the marinas and the upper-class condos. So it's a travesty to talk about humanitarian intervention when there are groups doing great things there, like the Cuban doctors, some of the volunteer doctors that are coming from Europe. And I think Haitians want is more U.S. doctors, nurses, medical people, people that will help rebuild their homes. But there's no strategic plan. Washington has no plans, none coming out of this puppet government that they set up there. To move the people out of the city and set them up in new locations. There's absolutely no plan. There's no strategy to get the economy going. There's no plan about relocating people. They're still living on the ground. They don't even have tents. And what's Obama do? He has a strategic plan to take over the airports, the ports, and to establish U.S. military around the country to prevent people from voicing their objections to the way things are being organized. That's what the military's there for. It's to keep the lid on in a very explosive situation where people are fed up with a government that hasn't even gone and looked at the slums that have been destroyed. The president of the country is sitting in the palace behind the Marine Guard.
It really is shocking, Jim. The government is practically invisible. The sovereignty is gone, and the country is militarized, and the Marines are there to come down hard on people who want nothing more than not to starve to death, to have their severe injuries treated. It's really shocking, and to protect the interests of the privileged there. Any U.S. Business-related operations, so they'll monitor the well-off areas to keep the poor people from getting close to the rich who don't want anything to do with the poor except exploit them, and 20,000 there, it's shocking. Jim, people should realize that if 20,000 U.S. combat troops, of course, support troops as well. But combat Marines, combat paratroopers, and the support they need, if they come into a little country like Haiti, my God, that's a serious operation, and they're not leaving in a hurry. I call it an occupation for the duration.
Yes, I think you're right, and I think it's a sign of the general response to the problem. So Obama has passed all the legislation. legislation that came in during the Bush administration about government controls over the telecommunications. This phone call and many millions of others around the country are now being monitored by the government, despite the fact we've committed no crime, just exercising our constitutional rights. Obama has approved of the directives in which CIA can actually assassinate American citizens if they're suspected of being terrorists or any kind of national security threat. The Obama is continuing the worst legislation from the Bush administration regarding the militarization of American life. And right now, on paper, we are living in a police state. The fact that it's being applied mainly to Muslims and people who have origins in Asia, Pakistanis and others, is only a temporary phenomena. I think you talk about the militarization of Haiti, but it's happening here, and it's been going on for some time, and the worst of it is that Obama has signed off on all the worst legislation that restricts our freedoms.
Absolutely, and I don't think it's happened yet. There's a vote on Patriot Act renewal, I think, still coming up. I don't think it's happened yet, but for sure it'll be renewed. They may rejigger it a little bit, but the Patriot Act, at the very least, wiped out three of the Bill of Rights amendments. Not that any of them really meant anything based on everything that went on before that, but in the last decade, things have gotten so much worse. And I've said the exact same things that you're saying, Jim, that Obama has continued the worst of what George Bush did. And he's added an awful lot on his own. He took the Bush bank out bailout operation that was almost literally compared to what Obama has done in the past year. And I've quoted several times this so-called TARP overseer, Neil Barofsky, saying that the bankers have either gotten or have been pledged $23.7 trillion. Well, you know, I mean, that just basically says whatever they want in the trillions is theirs for the asking.
Yes, and this accounts for the fact that this is a very peculiar crisis, because productivity is up 7% over the last 3 months. And that means that less workers are producing many more goods, and that means bigger profits. And that's one of the reasons the so-called recovery of the stock market, but the unemployment still remains. They're not hiring workers compensate for the running down of inventories. What the employers are doing is intensifying the workers' exploitation of workers instead of hiring new workers. That's why the Obama plan to give incentives to business, what that means simply is that they will have greater funding and not necessarily more hiring. And this plan of giving employers a tax write-off for hiring new workers means that there'll be a rotating process here. They'll fire workers in order to hire new workers in order to get the tax break. So there's nothing in place to see whether employers are hiring really new workers. They have to establish a baseline of what the original plant size was, the number of employers, and then they have to measure when they hire a worker. Because I've seen this right here in New York, where they fire about 50 or 60 workers, and then they go out and hire back 20 or 30 workers and get big tax write-offs, and the government thinks that they're adding to the labor force.
Oh, I agree, Jim. I honestly believe, to me it's shocking, well, it's shocking but unsurprising, but I honestly believe that Obama has absolutely no interest in creating jobs. And as you explained, this break for companies, the idea is just to hand over more of our money to corporations. They keep finding new ways to do it. So tax breaks and handouts for the corporate interest, and the ordinary people will end up paying for this. Well, of course, we've lost jobs every single month since Obama has been in office. Supposedly, there was a stimulus bill to create jobs. It hasn't created jobs. And then they fabricate accounts to say, well, you know, things aren't good, but if it hadn't been for the stimulus, it would have been so much worse because the stimulus created X number of jobs. And they lie. They absolutely lie. And again, I honestly believe that part of the agenda is not to create jobs. The idea, again, is to benefit the big interest and let the people be damned.
Well, the principal economic advisor to Obama was in Davos in Switzerland, this meeting of the big corporations and bankers and their academic peons. We're meeting in Davos, Switzerland, and Summers went there, and he said one out of every five American workers between 20 and 55 are out of work. That's double the figures that's handed out to the American public.
Oh, absolutely. We need to take another break. An economist that I love to follow, had him on this program a couple of times. He said the unemployment rate is over 21%, based on the way it was calculated in 1980.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
I think I got cut off. I forget what got on air or not on air, but the economist I've had on a couple of times is John Williams. He reverse engineers the Labor Department data, and I think he goes back to the formula that was used around 1980, so 30 years ago, and his latest unemployment figure is over 21%. Let me mention one other thing, too. This is interesting. I think it way understates the problem because I'm sure they're using the so-called Labor Department U3 figures, which are the headline numbers of 9.7% unemployment. But a study by Northeastern University in Boston breaks down income categories into 10 separate categories. And the lowest categories, household incomes of $12,500 or below, they have unemployment at 30.8% in the last quarter of 2009. Now, I suspect the real number is probably closer to 50%, but that's a pretty staggering number, greater than the headline figure during the 1930s.
Yes, I think the situation has deteriorated greatly over the last period. I think the work conditions at the place of employment are greatly deteriorated. There's a pressure, constant pressure, surveillance at the workplace. The prerogatives of workers today at the workplace have deteriorated enormously, and largely with the cooperation of the highly paid, overstuffed trade union officials who are very fast on the draw of dues and very slow in processing workplace complaints, if any. I know one trade union official that told one of his shop stewards, what are you complaining about? You got a job. And this was after workers were being pushed to the brink on the production line. And this goes across the board. That's what the productivity increase means, that one worker is doing three workers' production right now, and that comes out in official figures. Why has production increased and unemployment not decreased? And that's because they're squeezing out the maximum out of workers today, coming out of work exhausted, pushed to the limit, and this is something which is hasn't been noticed at all by critics and supporters of government besides. Now, in other countries where these austerity programs that Obama and Republicans are pushing, in Greece there's a general strike today that's paralyzed the whole country. There's not a plane flying out of Athens. There's not a train moving in the Piraeus. There's no ferries operating. The doctors, customs collection offices, the judges, everybody's gone out. They're bitter opposition. This is with the so-called center-left government, similar to Obama, that's imposing this. The big business elected these people for one purpose, and that was to do the dirty work that the right-wing politicians were unable to push across. That while the trade unions didn't have a Democrat in office, they were vocal and bellicose in denouncing the government. Now that they got a Democrat, or in Europe, a social Democrat, there's a strange silence over the same abusive, regressive policy. So there's a logic to this madness of why elect a fresh face, because a fresh face could do what a dirty face could not do. And that's the case with the U.S. today, where the Democrats are useful in carrying out measures which are highly unpopular and disorienting their mass base. But I'm wondering how long it's going to take for American workers to finally stand up and say enough, or basta in Spanish, and move on and take this government on, if not a new party or new elections. The right wing is out in the streets. The so-called Tea Party people are out protesting. They're really fronted by the corporations and the drug companies. I read in USA $500 million was spent just over the last 6 months, principally by Big Pharma and some of the companies, the private hospitals and oil companies, etc., all against climate control and health plans and medical programs. $500 million. Can you imagine that?
Shocking, Jim. Absolutely shocking.
And this is called lobbying. Lobbying is buying politicians. Lobbying is corruption. When you spend $500 million, you're not just putting records on a radio program. You're going out with a bag of money into the congressional offices and saying, here, we're giving you $100,000 for your next campaign. We're buying your vote. Now, pay off. Provide us with $1 billion. For every $1 million you get, we want $1 billion back from the U.S. taxpayer.
Don't you and I wish we could make an investment that could bring us that kind of a return? Absolutely guaranteed, no risk. No risk. Another break, Jim, and we'll come right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. I'm with Jim Petras, talking about the dismal state of things. No matter what topic we get on, Jim, there really is no good news in sight, and it all comes down to corrupted politicians working with predatory giant oligopolists. I have nothing against fair and honest business, but when the business sector gets so consolidated and powerful that they literally can buy any kind of government policy they want, the kind of policies that benefit them at the expense of most others, that is a deeply corrupted system. And sooner or later, I think push has to come to shove, and something has to happen. And like you, I'm wondering how long will it take people who are being harmed so much to really awaken to the realization that unless they do something, nothing is going to change. It'll only get worse. it's up to us to change things.
Well, here in Binghamton, New York, a group of us working people have put out a first number of a monthly local newspaper that deals with employment issues, housing issues, the subcontracting of public sector jobs to private contractors who pay half the wage of a of living wage, and we're distributing it to people in their workplaces and at sporting events, particularly local hockey team hockey games. And we're getting a tremendous response. There's virtually no one that says no when we hand them the newspaper and we tell them what it's about. It's a tremendous response that we've gotten out of a 10-page paper with looking essentially at local issues that resonate with national issues. The fact that the government's giving subsidies that are allocated for low-income housing community areas. They're using that money to subsidize the machinery of an established manufacturer, and that's not what the money was designated for. So we're on to not only informing people, but showing them that there's a there's some reference points out there. We're asking people to write for the newspaper and write about their own experiences at the workplace dealing with the local officials. The whole issue of subcontracting jobs, taking jobs from skilled, experienced workers with 20, 30 years of experience and being replaced by sometimes people that don't know what the job's all about simply because they're being paid minimum wage. So we're beginning to see something here, at least locally, by moving out and working. Maybe we started out with a dozen people. Now we have 3 dozen people working on distributing and writing and talking up the issues that we're writing about.
Gee, that sounds marvelous, Jim. It reminds me of something that happens just a couple of blocks from where I live in downtown Chicago, not a publication, but there's a group that is on the street every Sunday. I don't go out there, especially on a cold winter day, to wonder if they're out there then, but they're on the street handing out materials on what's going on in occupied Palestine. And they are there like clockwork, and it's a combination of people. It's Jewish people, it's Muslim people, I'm sure Christian people. And one time I stopped and I chatted with them at some length, and this is a couple of years ago now. They ended up inviting me to have I think at that time they had monthly sessions in Evanston, about 20 miles north of downtown Chicago. They invited me to come out and speak at one of them, which was a novel experience for me. I haven't done that much overall, but they invited me to come out and speak, and they had two other people who had been in Palestine. I've never been, but I was one of them, and we spent a couple of hours talking and answering questions, and it was wonderful. And they had about 30, 40 people show up for this meeting that took place in an Evanston library. And I told them, if you ever want me to come out again, I'll be delighted to do it. There are people. We just need more of us, Jim. That's the problem. There are wonderful people out there doing wonderful things and trying to spread the word on so many important issues. We just need more of us and more people to turn to the right sources of information and realize where they usually go or where they have gone over the years. Those aren't the places to find out anything. Those are places to clog your mind with what Republic calls garbage, and Project Censored on the nonsensical stuff calls junk food news, and the rest of it is propaganda to be sure you know nothing.
Hello?
Yeah, Jim.
Yeah. Well, there's a serious problem, too, with hiring and firing. Recently here, they laid off the gas and electric company laid off about 150 workers. And it turns out that they were mostly in their 40s and 50s. That's a very bad age to get laid off at because it's very difficult to get hired again, particularly at the salary that you went out at. And they're replacing them with new recruits that are at the baseline of salary. So what we're getting is a massive outing of people who are too young to go on Social Security and Medicare and too old to get a job in a job that pays commensurately. So there's a tremendous impact. I mean, it's true that most of the unemployed are young people today, but there's a real problem emerging of this laying off workers at the height of their age bracket and putting them out in the streets. And I know people here that work for IBM in skilled positions that are out there in minimum wage jobs at Walmart. And they're at the sporting goods counter and other places. And I asked them, how long you've been working here? And they say 2 or 3 years. And then I said, do you mind telling me what you're making? And they're ashamed. They're making a fraction of what they were when they were working in IBM. So this is a big problem, this reshuffling of American labor force, not only firing, but firing people at getting jobs, what the unemployment and the new jobs that Obama talks about in the Republicans, is jobs at a much lower wage level with very few social benefits. And no future.
No future is right, and it's been heading down this path for a lot of years since the recession before this one, Jim, the one that hit around 2000. So over the last decade, and I forget the exact numbers. I've seen them. I forget exactly what they were, but I think it comes down to basically there has been no job creation. So we've gone a decade because when the recession abated 2002 or 3, whenever it was, job creation was so meager. And I mentioned that in a few articles that I wrote a couple of years ago or so. It was the weakest recovery from a recession, especially in terms of job creation, possibly on record. And there were studies done that I quoted. I forget the names of the people who did them, but they were really shocking numbers on how weak the job recovery was. So now we plunge into it again in the fall of 2007, and it's much worse than it was back then. And this far into the crisis, we're still losing jobs, and I have to believe this is going to go on. Because the housing situation is still dismal. Everything I read says it. We went through the subprime debacle. Well, that was phase one. We have a commercial real estate problem. We have people who take out ordinary mortgages, higher income people who didn't need a subprime mortgage. They will have resets coming up this year and maybe multiple resets ahead. So we have another leg of the housing crisis to go, and I've seen people say that this could go on for another couple of years or more. So at the bottom of the housing situation could be many months in the future, And people will lose, and jobs will continue to be let go. The unemployment rate, whatever the official numbers are, will continue to get higher. And I mean, this situation is really disastrous. People will end up suffering bitterly, and Obama wants to freeze the budget on helping people. And then you've got the situation in the States, Jim, where Michigan, in one article, it looks like Michigan's unemployment rate, I'm sorry, Detroit's unemployment rate is something around 50%. 50% in a city like Detroit. And the first thing that crossed my mind was, well, you know, today Detroit, tomorrow Chicago, other cities around the country. Well, of course, they have the auto industry there. But you've got other situations in other cities. So what's happening in Detroit may be heading to a lot of places. The Rust Bowl of the 1980s, Jim, may be the employment disaster in city after city in big U.S. cities around the country. And worse than it's been since the 30s, and who knows how bad it's going to get. It's going to get pretty awful, I think.
Yes, and the danger is that the politicians, Republicans and Democrats, will try to distract people with foreign enemies. I think the tactic now is to demonize China. China, 90% of their stimulus package went into industry, reviving industry, subsidizing manufacturing, building high-speed railroads, et cetera. So they try to demonize. They're blaming China for what is the deficiencies in American capitalism, American White House policy that's bailing out Wall Street, not manufacturing sector, not stimulating innovations and technology, which the Chinese are doing. The Chinese now have produced more patents and scholarly works than ever before in their history. Now they're trying to stir up problem with Iran. Instead of opening up trade with Iran, they're trying to impose sanctions on Iran, try to create a war scare with Iran. When this panty bomber put some liquid into his drawers, they convoked the 40-country meeting about Yemen, where this guy supposedly hung out for a while. So Yemen became a diversion. China's a diversion. Iran is in a diversion. Afghanistan, every place but in the USA. This business of using overseas threats to scare people and to divert their attention. The problem of American workers is not China. It is the United States government, the U.S. multinationals that subcontract production overseas because they say it's cheaper. Well, is it cheaper to have American workers out of work, not producing goods? It's cheaper for the corporation, but it's costly for the country. And I think they confuse the two things. What? America is not multinational corporations. America is the American people.
Well, indeed so, Jim. China, for all its faults, concentrates on industrial capitalism, investing in productive things to literally grow the economy. And here we're investing in financialization, which basically is handing trillions to the Wall Street banks. So that banking for them is just a sideline, and they're not really doing much of that now. They are nothing but casinos. So we've lost what could be called, there's a book that I've got read years ago called Casino Capitalism. I mean, that was before all this stuff is going on. But that's exactly what American capitalism is, casino capitalism.
And China is
really productive.
What is not casino is military.
Oh.
If we took what our military spending was, we could create millions of jobs in America. The military operations, every troop that we station abroad costs $100,000 in terms of upkeep, in terms of logistics, the transportation, et cetera. This is really where our money is going. It's going to the military. When Obama said he's going to put a freeze He said that's not counting what he calls security. What he calls security is military, and there's a consensus on that between the Republicans and Democrats that the military's and police budgets do not get touched, that the scores of agencies that are poking into our business is off limits as far as budget cuts or reallocating funding. How can we continue to put billions of dollars, and the last figure I saw was $60 billion, into Afghanistan? They can't even dig a tunnel full of snow out and 150 people smothered in Afghanistan. So they put money over there and they can't even dig people out of snowdrifts. Well, here we are in the United States crying for investments, crying for city governments. There are city governments that don't have snow plows today. Here's Washington, D.C., the home of the $1 trillion budget that doesn't have enough snow plows so that people can go to work. And maybe that's a good thing if the Congress stays home, because they'll do more damage going to work than they do when they stay home because of the snow which is piled up at the doors, because they don't have snow plows in Washington, D.C., the capital of the number one superpower.
That is unbelievable. that would be that should be a topic for an article, Jim. Let's take another break and we'll come right back. Oh, my goodness. We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Jim, I think all the time it's not a particularly good time for young people, so different from the way things were when we grew up. They were far from perfect then and many years before we ever came into this world. But given the way things are now and when in doubt, as you suggest, if things get bad enough and people start expressing their angst too much, well, just divert them by starting another war. I mean, that always gets their attention and gets them to refocus on something else. And I'm just wondering if maybe there's some kind of a plot to deliver another 9/11 or something like it in the months ahead. I'm sure they have contingency plans because they have them for everything. So it could be we're going to face another war in the months ahead, which would be just that we don't have enough wars. We need another one. That's the way things are going.
Well, I think the question is they're starting at this time with a public that's really fed up with wars. I think they'd have to put on a tremendous scenario that this war threat is so immediate and direct and massive. Otherwise, people are jaded now. There's been the Iraq war. There's the Afghanistan war. There's the pro-Israel crowd beating the drums for an Iran war. There's the Yahoos yelling against China. There's Clinton, Hillary Clinton screaming about China. This is very irresponsible. The Chinese could dump $1.5 trillion worth of bonds or more onto the market, and the dollar would be worth toilet paper. What are these people doing? What amateurs they are. Here they should be buttering up China to not dump these treasury notes so that the American currency would retain its value. Instead, they go sticking their fingers in their eyes. They start raising this phony Dalai Lama who claims to be descended from God. They're bringing him into the White House. I mean, instead of bringing working people in, Afro-Americans from Detroit, to talk about unemployment, they bring Obama's bringing the Dalai Lama Can you see a worse charlatan, this holy man that works with the CIA, coming in to provoke China with this separatism? Tibet's been part of China for centuries, and the Chinese have built the country up from being a cowherd to run by a bunch of monastic lazy bums that never worked a day in their life into the 21st century, and they want to split it off, and the Chinese object. What would they think if the Chinese came over here and said, you know, the Confederacy was a good idea. Let's separate the South from the North. What would we say about that, especially if they found some Chinese guru down in Mississippi and said, you know, he's a God figure.
Oh, and that's a wonderful analogy. I love that. I also think, Jim, that if the forces that run my state of Illinois decide that they want no more of this stuff either, and decide they want to go it on their own, I'm all for the independent nation of Illinois, or whatever name they want to give it. Or if they want to secede from the U.S. and join Canada, that really isn't my first choice, but that would be preferable to being a part of the USA.
Well, I think we probably won't come to that, but we're certainly getting to a stage where we're creating enemies with countries that should be our friends.
Oh, indeed. We're out of time. The music, they're going to cut away to the next program. Thanks,
Steve,
as always.
It's been great being on your program, and I wish you the best.
Oh, thank you so much, Jim. And join us again tomorrow for Ernie Hancock.